growing up because my she could have ate him a hop. So, of course, the Shabbos Babaji Maharaj, of course, is the spiritual master of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who is the spiritual master of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who is our spiritual master and, of course, is the founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So as far as what a Babaji is, it's very interesting. A Babaji is one who has taken the highest order of the renounced life. And there's different stages in the renounced life, the life of a sannyasi. There's Bahudak, Kutichak, Paravajakacharya, and finally Paramahansa. So I'll describe what those stages are very briefly. Because when one first takes sannyas, generally it's a question of gradually extricating yourself from your material attachments. Usually, as the expression goes, it can't be done cold turkey. Cold turkey, of course, is an expression when someone is addicted to drugs and they just give them up, and sometimes they even die from the withdrawal symptoms. So renunciation, according to the Varnashram culture, is a gradual process. I mean, you actually even see this within Varnashram itself, not only within the sannyas order of life. I mean, your brahmachari, of course, is trained up in understanding that he's a servant of the spiritual master. And then the grahastha, when the brahmachari later gets married, is always remembering his very blissful, simple days as a brahmachari. He's remembering how nice it was, a very simple, now things are so complicated, I need a moving van to go to one place to another. Previously, just like when I was a brahmachari in Krishna consciousness, we had one box from the grocery store that all of our belongings belonged in, fit in that one box. And then later one gets married, then with two or three moving vans. And then one is thinking, boy, life was so simple before. So then brahmachari, grahastha, and then vanaprastha. Vanaprastha, of course, vanaprastha means to go to the forest, but literally means that someone remains with their family and they preach Krishna consciousness and they serve Krishna together. And then gradually there's sannyas, or complete renunciation. Of course, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, in this day and age, the preferable station or order of sannyas is what's called kshetra sannyas, where one remains with the family and serves Krishna. One remains with his wife, because there's no more sense gratification. In other words, the wife is no longer cooking pakoras and sandesh and sambar and idlis. But then she's just boiling some vegetables for him at that point. You understand? It's not that one just remains with the wife and the wife is just cooking like a maha feast every day for the husband and said, I'm a vanaprastha. So, you know, there's renunciation. And then finally, you know, so anyway, in the traditional Varnashram system, there's sannyas and the different stages I mentioned before, Bahudak, Kutichak, Parvadakacharya, and Paramahansa. So in the Bahudak stage, one is not quite that renounced, so his wife still cooks for him, and she sends with his son or some other family member the food, and he's living on the outskirts of the village. And then he becomes a little more renounced, and he figures, oh, maybe I can live without having someone cook for me. And then he goes door to door. That's called madhukari, like a bee, like a bumblebee. You know, goes flower to flower and picks a little pollen from each flower. So then he does the madhukari thing. And madhukari is very interesting. He's not supposed to eat a lot at one place. He's supposed to take a little bit from each place. In other words, one japati from each place, not two pizzas or something like that from each house. Anyway, so that's the madhukari, kutichak. Then after that, there's the paramahansa, the parvajakacharya stage, sorry, where one just travels everywhere, preaches Krishna consciousness, and just depends on Krishna for the food. He doesn't really even ask people for food anymore. You know, Krishna sends the food, it's all right. And if Krishna doesn't send the food, that's all right too. Just like Madhavendra Puri, He was traveling around. That's Parvadakacharya. That means someone who's wandering. And he was in Vrindavan, near Govardhan. And he didn't have anything to eat. And Krishna himself brought him something to eat. He didn't make any endeavor to get something to eat. And then finally, the final stage of sannyas is the Paramahansa stage. In the Paramahansa stage, that's the Babaji order, where one just remains in one place and just is absorbed in his internal life with Krishna. And we find in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes that when Lord Chaitanya first took sannyas, of course, he eventually went to Jagannath Puri, but he kept traveling too. He went to South India, he went to Vrindavan. But then during the final years of his pastimes, he just stayed in Jagannath Puri and relished the internal life of Krishna consciousness. Of course, Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself in the mood of Srimati Radharani. So his manifestations of internal life were actually manifested externally too. Like the pastimes where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would be found by the gate, the Singhadwara gate of the temple, and the cows would be licking him, and his arms would be, actually he would look like a tortoise. The arms would actually enter into the body, and sometimes the arms would be extremely extended. And, you know, he definitely exhibited the topmost symptoms of what's called Mahabhava. But these symptoms of Mahabhava are only exhibited by the gopis, and especially Srimati Radharani. So, anyway, so that's the Paramahansa order of sannyas. So Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj was in the Paramahansa order of sannyas. But before becoming a sannyasi, and it's interesting because this appears to be a common denominator in the lives of many great personalities, then basically Krishna took everything away from him. Like Prabhupada experienced the same thing. Prabhupada was engaged in business, and his business basically went bankrupt. And he had so many enemies and things like that. And also, in his own household life, his household life was, I mean, at least his interactions with his wife were bankrupt too, because his wife was always attempting to curtail his preaching activities. She would blow dust using a feather duster in the faces of the people he was preaching to. And, you know, she would sell his books for tea biscuits and all sorts of things like that. I mean, so you see, you find there's, you know, a very traumatic experience Prabhupada had in household life. Traumatic financially, traumatic in his interactions with his family. So much trauma. And then Prabhupada eventually came to the Western world, took sannyas. And, of course, this is manifested in the verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Yashaham Anagridami, Horishe Tadhanam Shanai. For those who I especially favor, I take everything away from them. You know, so that basically all their relatives and everything like that, they don't want to interact with that person anymore. And therefore, the person has to take shelter of Krishna's holy names. So, in other words, Krishna may take away someone's money, someone's reputation. No one should get scared about this because it only happens with great devotees. So if you're not a great devotee, it's not scary. If you're just an ordinary devotee, Krishna lets you just go. But if you're, you know, a great and interested devotee, you find the common denominator there. So with Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, little family history, he appeared in the 1830s in what's now called East Bengal or Bangladesh. And it's interesting, he appeared in a very close to the place where Narottama Das Thakur appeared in Bangladesh, along the banks of the holy river called the Padma River. And in this Padma River, of course, Narottama Das Thakur's pastimes, it's described that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu deposited his love of God in the Padma River. And when Narottama Das Thakur bathed in the Padma River, his whole complexion changed, his mood changed, and he externally manifested pure love of God. So in a similar way, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj appeared along the banks of the Padma River as a son of a Vaishya. And it's also interesting, too, that many of our acharyas appeared in non-Brahminical families. I mean, not all of them, but many of the acharyas appeared in non-Brahminical families. I mean, the Namacharya, Haridas Thakur, certainly appeared in a non-Brahminical family, appeared in a Muslim family. And it's interesting, though, sometimes people say, well, if someone is not coming from a Brahmin family, they shouldn't become a guru. But Haridas Thakur was certainly a guru, and he initiated a particular disciple who was probably more elevated than anybody else's disciple. That was Durga Devi, became his disciple. He initiated Durga Devi in the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Even though Durga Devi had previously been initiated in the mantra, the chanting Ramnam by Lord Shiva, he actually served as a Durga Devi's initiating spiritual master, which is interesting. So anyway, so in the same way, Gaurakishore Das Babaji, who was previously known as Vamsi Das, was born in a Vaishnava family, and before he took the renounced order of life, he was engaged as a grain merchant. A grain merchant means not necessarily someone who stockpiles grain, but someone who acts as a middleman between people who have grain and people who want grain. You know, wholesale. It's like a wholesale type thing. That's generally what it means. So when he was young, his mother and father arranged a marriage for him. That's standard in India. And he remained in household life for 20 years. So what happened is, the traumatic thing that happened is his wife passed away after 20 years. And so, you know, when things happen in this world, traumatic things like that, you know, someone passes away or some disease or miserable circumstance, there's several different ways one can take it. I mean, one way is that one gets angry at God. You know, one thinks, you know, I'm a devotee. I've been worshiping you for all these years. You know, what's going on? You know, I gave everything to you. You know, sounds like someone's mother. I gave everything to you. I sent you to school, you know, like the mothers would say. And now how could you do this to me, joining the Hare Krishna movement? So in the same way people do that with God. They say, you know, God, I've been serving you. You know, I've been chanting 16 rounds every day for the last God knows how many years. And now, you know, why are you making me sick? You know, why do you have my family member pass away? Well, guess what? Krishna's arranged the material world to help you become renounced from this world. And it's definitely a place of misery. You know, why am I getting old? And what did you expect? You chant Hare Krishna, you're not going to get old? I mean, I expected that when I joined the movement, but it didn't work out like that. I thought I'd always remain a young brahmachari, but it didn't work out. So, anyway, so Krishna arranges this, and it's a shocking experience sometimes. So, like I said, one of the ways is one can get angry at God. Another way is one thinks, there's no God, you know. If there was God, I had a religious teacher, not in Krishna consciousness, but in the religion I was in before I joined the movement, who actually said that. His father passed away, and he said to his class, and I was a member of that class in religious school, he said, class, I've just come to the realization there's no God and there's nothing after death. And this was a religious teacher and teaching young boys and girls. You know, I was about 11, 12 years old, and I remember it to this day. And because he, when he saw the miseries of this world, he thought, you know, if bad things are happening to good people, how could there be God? You know, this in philosophy is called, the branch of philosophy is called theodicy, the study of the justice of God, theodicy. So many people lose faith because of that. You know, when things happen, you know, there's obviously no God because, you know, look what's happening in Israel, and look what's happening in the West Bank and Gaza. And look what's happening in Iran. All the, you know, religion is causing all the problems in the world today. That's what people think. So there's different ways. But a devotee, he will just take this as, when an unfortunate or a traumatic thing occurs, he takes it as an impetus to surrender more to Krishna. Like if someone starts criticizing them, and sometimes devotees even put themselves in a miserable situation. I'm not saying we should do that. But we find Lord Rishabhadev did that. He took up this process of Jata Yoga. He put himself in a situation so, you know, people were making fun of him, throwing things at him. I mean, practically harassing him in so many ways so he could focus more on Krishna. So this is a common thing. Anyway, so Jagannath, so what happened is that Gaurakrishnadas Babaji Maharaj took this as an impetus to renounce everything. He just renounced his business like that, and he immediately went to Vrindavan. And in Vrindavan, he approached this great devotee, Bhagavat Das Babaji, who was a disciple of Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, who was Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, of course, is the spiritual master of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the Siksha Guru of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And then he took from him what's called the Babaji Vesh, or the dress of the Babaji. And the dress of the Babaji is not like the dress of the standard sannyasi. It's a very short, like white gumsha almost. And one just has one wrap on the top, no shirt. Certainly no kurta. The kurta is actually, kurtas come from Afghanistan. They don't actually come from India. It's not a spiritual shirt. It actually comes from Afghanistan. It's, you know, it's a Muslim item, which has been adopted, you know, by people in India. But it's actually not, has nothing to do with Hindu culture or anything like that. So anyway, but because Babaji's are not supposed to wear sewn cloth. So they would just have like a piece of cloth on top, some wrapper it's called, and then a very short dhoti, gumsha type of thing on the bottom, and that's it. And so, anyway, so he got this traditional dress, and he became completely renounced from everything at this point. I mean, it's interesting that some people get very renounced when something traumatic happens, but then about 3 weeks later, you know, then they get unrenounced. It's called, what is it, Smarshana Vairagya. Renunciation of the crematorium. They become very, you know, they're very renounced, and then it doesn't last very long. But if one takes up Krishna consciousness seriously, the renunciation continues, but it requires a great attention. So he went to Vrindavan, and he resided in various parts of Braja Mandal, and he traveled around Braja Mandal for approximately 30 years. He stayed in Vrindavan and also some of the other places in northern and western India. And he associated with other great Vaishnavas and Babaji's there. And I could mention their names, but it's not important. Bhagavan Das Babaji in Kalna. And he also went eventually to Navadvip. And he got the title of Bhajananandi. Bhajananandi means someone who chants just bhajan. And there's two types of devotees, Goshtananandi and Bhajananandi. But Goshtananandi is a preacher, and Bhajananandi is someone who just sits and chants and cultivates his relationship with Krishna and Radharani. So in 1897, when the place of appearance of Lord Chaitanya was revealed by Jagannath Das Babaji and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Gaurakishore Das Babaji went to Navadvip Dham to join them. And he remained in Navadvip Dham from that point onwards until he left this world. And he would engage in severe austerities, very severe austerities. And in order to cook, just to give you an idea, he would collect dry wood from the paths, and he would wash earthen pots. He would use earthen pots that were discarded by villagers during the time of the eclipse. Now, generally, you know, in India, when there's an eclipse, everything's considered impure. You're supposed to throw all the food away, and even the pots, you know, if they're earthen pots, obviously you don't throw away stainless steel pots. But in earthen pots, you would throw them away. But he would use these pots that were considered impure and unusable. And in order to clothe himself, he'd go to the shore of the Ganges and collect, this is pretty heavy, the discarded cloth that had been utilized to cover corpses And that's how, the clothing he would use. And there's reasons for that. The woman would think, oh, this is really gruesome. But it's, the reason for that is that when one takes up the renounced order of life, one should cultivate a sense of being independent from depending on others. You know, because when you depend on others, then there's some control. I mean, even a subtle control, that you feel obligation, that you feel you have to do something, and then you're controlled by the other person. And so it's best always to be independent. Or, you know, sometimes in the Christian conscious movement, we have to accept service from other people, but the mentality should be that one is not controlled. Like if someone gives a donation or something, it's not that you get controlled by that, or someone does some service, it's not that you become controlled by that. So he wanted to remain always independent of the support of others. I mean, sometimes in ISKCON, when one takes the renounced order of life, so many people are serving, you actually become a little dysfunctional. You forget how to tie your own shoelaces. Just like I was living in Govardhan recently, and I was taking care of myself. I was shopping and everything like that. And the disciples of another sannyasi were asking me, who's taking care of you? I said, myself. And they said, well, who's shopping for you? Me. Who's cleaning your house? Me. Who's cleaning your clothes? Me. And they said, really? You can do that? And jokingly, I said, I'm an adult. I'm not a 10-year-old boy. I said, maybe later, when I'm 99 years old, we'll talk about it. So, but there's this whole conception, you can't, you really, sometimes people ask me, you really drive a car, Maharaj? Yeah, I've had a license since I've been 16. people, it's just shocking. And so you actually become overly dependent upon others. It's a real danger, sannyasa in an institution like ISKCON. So one has to make a deliberate endeavor not to think that you need that. I mean, you can accept that, but if you think you need that, then that it actually contaminates the mind. You have to be ready, like Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, just to do what he's doing in order to survive. So, in 1897, also Bhaktivinoda Thakur constructed his bhajan kutir and house in Godrum Dwipa, which is right on the other side of the Jalangi River from our Mayapur Chandradaya Mandir. And that ashram is called Swananda Shukada Kunja. And it also had previously been the site of Lord Nityananda's Namahat, that means marketplace of the holy name. Wow. There's a new brahmachari. Well, it's good to see you. So this was the place where Lord Nityananda started his preaching activities under the order of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj would come and hear Bhaktivinoda Thakur speak about Krishna consciousness. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur would sometimes utilize the example of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj to show or illustrate the principle of nirapeksha. Nirapeksha means complete disinterest in things. Like there's several types of renunciation. One type is when one becomes negative towards things. So, sense gratification. You find this sometimes. Some immature sannyasis, they just screw up their faces like that. They say, those householders. You're eating too opulently, like Ramchandra Puri did in the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj was just like neutral, nirapeksha. That means nirapeksha means just like neutral, Who cares? You want to go see a Bollywood film? All right, that's your problem. Not my problem. He's not being negative about Bollywood films, nor positive. So anyway, Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj performed bhajan together. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur constructed a room for Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj right, and if you've ever been there, it's right next to the house. It's a very small bhajan kutir. It's, It's about the size of about three of these chairs. And that's where he chanted. It was a tin roof on it and everything like that. Gurkhasrudas Babaji Maharaj's only possessions in this world were the Tulsi beads he wore around his neck and the Tulsi mala, the chanting beads. Hmm. Sometimes, actually, he chanted on rope rather than on beads, too. And also, he had a few books. Sometimes it's described he was illiterate, but he actually read, so he wasn't quite illiterate. I mean, he wasn't like a scholar by what we would consider in the external viewpoint, but he certainly could read. And he read the books of Narottama Das Thakur, particularly Prarthana, and the Prema Bhakti Chandrika. Some of the prayers we have or chant every day are from these books, like the Shiguru Charana Padma Kevala Bhakati Sadma are from Narottama Das's books. And sometimes he wore a torn cloth, and sometimes he even went naked. I mean, it's like this is a particular type of renunciate or Paramahamsa. It's called an avaduta. Avadut, or avaduta, depending whether you speak Hindi or Sanskrit, means someone who's like the wind. In other words, just floats around, has no regulative principles that he has to follow because he's completely absorbed in Krishna internally. I mean, basically, most of the times there's no external consciousness. It's just basically internal consciousness. And it's described at other times, he would utter these sounds that nobody understood what they meant. And he would never let anyone serve him. And his renunciation was very much reminiscent of the renunciation of Raghunath Das Goswami. And he was very, very astute as far as revealing when other people were cheating. And there's many stories. Hopefully we get to some of these stories. Hey, even if the person who was cheating in the name of, you know, renunciation or something was outside of his immediate purview or vision, he would know what they were doing. And he would just, like, you know, scream it out. You know, why are you having an illicit sex life? And at a particular juncture in his life, he was actually physically blind. He couldn't see anything. Yet it appeared he was able to see everything because he was in direct contact with the super soul. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur wrote something very interesting about him. He said, many young, clever, old, learned, foolish, proud, and reasonable persons came into contact with Srila Guru Kishoredas Babaji, yet they couldn't realize his real identity. Many persons came to consult with Gurkhasrudas Babaji Maharaj about their insignificant desires. They would always get suggestions, but those suggestions were usually the causes of disappointment. Innumerable persons accepted the Babaji dress and acted as devotees of the Lord, but actually they were imposters, far away from being real sadhus. Srila Gurkhasrudas Babaji Maharaj never accepted such a false way of life. His sincerity was apparent in itself. His loving attitude was such that even when he attained a very opulent offering, his renunciation predominated. This is all quotes from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Srila Gurkhasrudas Babaji Maharaj never displayed any distaste for those persons who were inimical to him. He also never manifested any special affection for those very dear to him. He would often express himself saying, in this material world, I am alone in my service to Lord Krishna. Everyone is worshipable by me. Another noteworthy transcendental topic is that many materialistic foolish persons masquerading as devotees and imitating pure devotion would come and surround him. They would consider that they were his dear objects of affection while they engaged their minds in so many worldly sense objects. Srila Gaurakishore Prabhu would never display any intention of driving them away and also no symptoms of a compromising attitude. This is, and there's, of course, the famous story is when he met Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. When he first met Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, He was wearing a cap made of tiger skin and was carrying a basket containing various items that he was utilizing in his devotional service. And he offered Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur 4 or 5 pieces of rope upon which to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and also a tilak stamp with the initials of Hare Krishna, that means Ha and Krir, Ha Re Krishna. And also offered him the tiger skin cap and other paraphernalia for worshipping Krishna. He had previously received this. Gorgashodas Babaji Maharaj had previously received all these things from his spiritual master, Bhagavat Das Babaji. And in the month of Magh, Gorgashodas Babaji Maharaj initiated Srila Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur. And there's interesting stories about that. Let me see if I get to this. I'm going to skip some of these stories because this is actually very important. Anyway, I know the story. I don't have to read it. That Srila Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur was told by his father, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, to take initiation from Gorgashodas Babaji Maharaj. So he approached him, and Srila Gorgashodas Babaji Maharaj said no. And then he came back again, and Srila Gorgashodas Babaji Maharaj said, I have to ask Mahaprabhu. And then Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur came back again, and he said, have you asked Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? And Gorgashodas Babaji Maharaj said, I forgot. And then he came back another time, and Srila Gorgashodas Babaji Maharaj said, I asked him, but he said no. So, you know, really testing the determination of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And eventually, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, I'll give up my life unless you give me initiation. And so he got initiation from Gorgashodas Babaji Maharaj. Now, many of the Babajis today, I mean, let's say the Babajis who are inimical to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the reason they're inimical is because Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur actually exposed their some of their nefarious activities. Not all Babajis, but some of them actually. I mean, I know it in Radhakund there's so many stories about Babajis and illicit life. And even there's violence, and there was shooting there recently at Radhakund. So, you know, all is not what it appears to be on the surface when you go to Radhakund. You have to be very, very careful. And, you know, anyway, enough about that. So many of the Babajis were opposed to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and they formed this party called the Anti-Party. I mean, it's not a formal party, but it's a philosophical statement that they said he never took initiation from Srila Gorgashodas Babaji Maharaj. Therefore, his sampradaya is improper. And you'll actually find, if you go to Radhakund today, some of the Babajis may tell you that in order to dissuade you from following Prabhupada to take you away. And we've lost several devotees because when this poison enters the ears, it's actually quite offensive. When it enters the ears, it poisons one's bhakti lata bij and causes one to lose faith. Because faith is actually sometimes very fragile. At least in the beginning stages, when one is a neophyte, Kanishtha Adhikari, the faith is actually very, very fragile and can be broken very, very easily. So this has happened to many, but even many devotees who were studying in Gopi Pranadana Prabhu's Sanskrit school, because the Babajis, many of them know Sanskrit quite well, they were taken away. 2 or 3 devotees from the school were lost in that way. So that's the Anti-Party. And, of course, we have a lot of literature that disproves their particular point of view. It is a fact that Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur did take initiation from Gorgashodas Babaji Maharaj. Anyway, so Gorgashodas Babaji Maharaj's renunciation was exhibited in many different ways. Here's one story. When Gorgashodas Babaji Maharaj's eyesight was deteriorating, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur requested him to go to Calcutta for treatment, And Bhaktivinoda Thakur also requested Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj to go for treatment. And Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj said, I will never go to the illusory universe, Calcutta. I mean, he had taken a vow as a Babaji to always remain in Navadvip Dham and not leave. So, you know, it's very important to understand, it's not that he wasn't interested in, you know, helping himself physically, but not to the extent of breaking his vow. Such as a Vaishnava, when a Vaishnava makes a vow or promise or determination, he sticks to it. It's called Dhrita Vrata. No matter what, he sticks to that. No matter what happens, what attracts him, or what miseries are there, he doesn't give it up. When Bhaktivinoda Thakur said you should go to Calcutta, and that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would stay with him in Calcutta and assist him, and therefore he wouldn't have to have any inconvenience there, Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj replied, I will never accept service from Prabhu. Prabhu meant his own disciple. I would rather die by drowning. If I drown myself in the Ganges, I will become a ghost, so I will drown myself in the Saraswati. And so he ran towards the river to drown himself. And basically, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur pursued him and requested him to return. And he couldn't be found for 45 days after that. Anyway, there's so many nice stories that are told. There's a book about that was written by Karnamrita about Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj and Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. I don't know if there's a copy here, but there's many, many nice stories about these two great personalities. Okay, that's all we have time for this morning. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, all glories to Srila Gaurakishore Das.